Today is Monday, February 14th, 2005, and fixing to go to the Angelina County Historical Commission regular monthly meeting, and Reuben Jelly Samuel will be the speaker.
This person, I've known Mr. Samuel most of my life, I guess. We were members of the same church, Long's Chapel CME Church. We were on many boards together, and we've worked on fundraisers and many, many things there at the church. But he's an unusual person in that he's always been very kind-hearted and always been concerned about people of the community. Even today he has a community garden. Well, he has a garden in which he passes out food to persons in the community. He's a family man and a grandparent, and just a wonderful person to know. I was deeply impressed when I came to the Diabol Historical Center and saw him on the pictures there playing baseball, and I remember some of those years, and it was an exciting time. So to this society and all of you that have come this morning, I present to you now Mr. Reuben Samuel, who's known as Jelly.
Well, I'm going to talk about baseball. Back in the old days, every sawmill had a baseball team back in the old days. And Diabol, we had one of the best going. We beat everybody we met, all from 40 up to 46. That's when we broke up, in 46. And when no team could come down and beat us down at Diabol. And we played every Sunday. We worked every day. We couldn't practice here on a Sunday before the game. That's what made us so good down there. We couldn't do nothing but play baseball. And I'm proud to tell you, I love baseball today. I go to these little baseball teams here out to Angelina. I'm too old to walk much, but I still go to baseball every time I get a chance. I'm there. And I thank the word that I could play that long like I did. 6 years. And nothing but baseball. And I'm proud to tell you all, baseball is one of the best games going right now.
Well, I think Mr. Samuel, tell us about the time you came from Shreveport. Tell us about the trip to Diabol when you came in from Shreveport.
Well, Diabol come up to play Shreveport. I was playing in Shreveport, Louisiana then. And they come up there and beat us in Shreveport. And I hoboed back down here to play with Diabol. I had to ride the freight train to Lulucka and walk from here to Diabol back in the 40s, because the freight train didn't stop down there then. And so that's the way. And I had to ride the banks down there 1 year before I could even get there to play, because they had such a good baseball team. After one of the men died, then I started playing left field. And I played it up until 46.
How many people did you have a nine-man team?
Ma'am?
Did you have nine on your team?
That's right. Nine players on my team there. We had more than that, but we couldn't but nine play, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
How many were you still living today?
Well, the last one of my team died last year, Jeff Tripley.
Oh, yes.
On there. He died,
no. Okay.
Last year, he was the last driver church. Me and him was the only one. Yeah, okay. Jeff Tripley on there. Mm-hmm. That's the last. And I'm the last of the old Diabol, right now.
Did you always play left field?
Ma'am, I played left field back in them days.
Can you recall many of the faces that's on the picture here, Mr. Sam?
All of them.
All of them.
Yeah.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, yeah. All of them did. Amos Simmons, Amos Randolph, Fred Randolph.
Mm-hmm.
And there was Lee, Oldtown.
Okay.
Jeff Sibley.
Okay.
And Hubbard Brown. Hubbard Adams.
I knew him.
And Willie Trimble.
Okay.
Smokey Barnes. Otis.
Banks.
Banks. And right to left, that was Arthur Robert.
Okay.
And what's his name, man?
Robert Nash, I knew him.
Robert Nash, then O.E. Hubbard.
Okay, I knew him.
George Howard. Then Reuben Samuel was the last.
Amen.
Amen.
Jerry, you played 6 years and you played in 46 and must have started in 1940, is that correct?
That's right. I moved to Diapole in 1940.
And how old were you then?
21.
1940.
21.
You were 21 then?
Yeah.
Okay. So you were born in 1919.
I was born in 1919.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Samuel, tell us about your peanut patch.
Well, now, every time I hit a home run, they used to give me a peanut patch. I hit a double and slid in the second base, but my peanut patch had come out of my pocket. And I went back to get it and got thrown out. And they talked about me back in them days. Yeah, I went back to get my peanut patty. Yeah, I really liked peanut patties back in them days.
Did y'all win that game?
Oh, yeah, we won. But I got thrown out. That's when they talked about me, so. Back in them days.
Did you play with the sawmill team in Shreveport?
No, it wasn't a sawmill team in Shreveport I played with. It was a stove had
okay.
Up that end had a thing called Cush Grocery when we were up that end in Freeport.
Okay.
Wasn't no sawmill there. We played with a grocery store. They had a baseball team.
I guess I have always been under the impression that the sawmill teams played only other sawmill teams, but it sounds like you played other teams.
No, that's right. We played Beaumont,
okay.
Houston, Freeport, to get back to Freeport again. We went to Louisiana plenty of times. Leesville. We went all, everywhere we was ordered to come, we went.
Y'all didn't probably play anybody thought they could beat you, didn't
you? Yeah.
And I bet after that incident, about you losing your peanut patty, you going back and get it, all your phones saying probably gave you a patty and raised it up where it's
right out. Yeah. Yeah, we had plenty of fun back in them days. Now the youngsters don't like it much.
Who were some of your biggest rivals, the teams that you played?
Well, the biggest one we played was the North Dakota All-Stars team, because Beaumont had a team, Houston had a team. They hadn't been beat, so we beat them down there. And Shreveport had a good team too up there. Beaumont, Shreveport, and Longview, we played all of them. Yeah, back in them days. Anybody, you know, called and let us know, you know, where we could play them, we went to play them.
And how did this All-Star team from North Dakota
well,
come
they
down?
Well, we had a man working on our son had to went up there. And he told them about how good Diapole was. And so they called and told us they want to play us. They want to come down and play us. And then we were, back in them days, it didn't cost but 50 cents to come in. We sold $300 worth of tickets out to Slippery Hill and sold $300 tickets right to 0094. Then we sold $300 worth of tickets at the gate. But our manager told us that we didn't make but $300. And we know that it was $900. And that's what broke the ball team up right there. We never played another game.
Was your manager from here?
Yeah, his name Otis Spikes, that was him. Right there. Yeah, he was up there now on the pit. Yeah. Told us we didn't make but $300. That told us that I'd get but $5 a piece back in them days. And so that broke the ball team up. We didn't play no more.
And the whole time you were playing ball, did you have any other income? Any other jobs?
Well, I worked for Southern Pine. I worked in Southern Pine down there. Yeah, I worked there until I left there in 1950.
What department did you work in?
I worked as a planer.
Planer?
I fed one of the big machines at the planer.
Mm-hmm. And Sunday was the only time you had to practice or play, right?
On a Sunday. That's right.
Did you play year-round?
No, that's only in the summertime.
Summertime, okay.
Yeah.
Baseball season.
That's baseball season.
Who was the manager? I didn't understand.
Otis Spike.
Spike?
Otis Spike was the manager then.
Where was he from? Where did he work?
Well, he come down from Pineland, see. See, Pineland and Dieball is both
that's
the same.
Right. Yeah, right.
He come down to manage us. He had been managing them over there in Pineland. See, Pineland had a team too.
He went around organizing people to play and scheduling y'all to play.
That's
manage
right.
You.
That's right.
But he was going to take $600.
Our money.
Y'all went on strike. I don't blame you.
He did.
Cost money to go on the road.
Yeah, he really
did. Did you ever get your money from
him,
or did he just take it?
He just told us that we didn't make but $300. And we all know when the money come in.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I just take it.
Yeah, he just took it.
Yeah.
All hours.
Best you could do, yeah.
You ought to have thrown your peanut
patties.
Yeah.
That knocked my peanut patties out.
What would be the youngest players on your team?
The youngest player was Hubbard Allen. He was just into high school. We put him playing shortstop for us. Hubbard Allen. He was the youngest player on the team.
Did they buy equipment for you, or what did they do to help the team?
No, they didn't buy nothing for us. We bought our own stuff.
Y'all were just advertising for
us. That's right. Yeah. We had to buy our own equipment and everything.
Gary, do you have any bats or anything left in those days?
Bats? No, I give all them to them youngsters when I left there.
Gave them to who?
The youngsters. See, we had some youngsters around there then, trying to play. So I give all my stuff to them then. And I left and moved up here and left it. And then that came to 50.
Do you have any clippings or scrapbook or anything? Have you given that to the museum at
Dieball,
or is there some way to save this part of our history?
All these years, we gave the Dieball, all the pictures we had back in them days.
Did the Celtics did they have a team?
They had a team too. We used to play them too.
This lady, I think, is your age, and she has always talked about going and watching the baseball game.
Yeah.
My grandfather, her daddy.
Yeah.
Well, did you know a Jack Deggs? Jack Deggs. Clarence Melrose. He went by Jack all my life. But C.M. Deggs. But he worked for Lufkin Industries when they were doing that, and before that he was driving the engine for W.T. Carter. I think one of the trains that they got at SFA or out here at the museum.
What year was that you grabbed W. T. Cotton? I lived out in
He was born down there in the woods.
Cabinet?
Registered, so I assume, or close enough, but I can't find him in the Camp Ruby records.
But see, I used to live at Camp Ruby.
But she was born to Corrigan. She was born closer to Corrigan.
Yeah, I lived out there 39.
When?
39.
Well, they were probably up here working for Lufkin Industries then, because she married my daddy in 36. They were out here at Two Point and Harmony Hill then.
This is Mr. Johnny McClendon.
Really? He played back in them days.
And he played also. And we were all in the same church together.
And where did you play, Mr. McClendon?
Texas Foundry here.
Yeah, Texas Foundry.
Played for about 25 years. We gave it up in 79.
When did the Lufkin Foundry team disband?
Lufkin Foundry didn't have a team. They played, most of them played with us. Texas Foundry.
Who did you play for?
Texas Foundry.
Texas Foundry.
We started, he gave it up in 46, that's when we started. That's when I came to Lufkin, 46, and I started playing baseball then.
And it was an all-black team?
Yeah.
And how long did y'all play?
Oh, I played 25 years with them.
Did the team integrate during that time?
We used to play out there where the high school, where the old high school was. Mm-hmm. We had it was a park out that end. In 50, 49, 50, we played baseball out there. Where the old high school used to be, up there on Denver, that's where we used to play.
They had a baseball field there.
Yeah. Where they had a big park out there.
A big park out there.
Was the y'all don't know about that park?
No park didn't play in softball this year.
I played softball
here.
I had a foot down in the Army.
Did
you ever play the Federal Mill when they had a team? They went in operation in 1940, and I'm not sure what year it was, because they organized the team, but I know they wanted some growth. But it was softball, wasn't it?
No, I played softball
here with Texas. We had a team, a softball team. That was way up 10 years ago.
That's 52.
Yeah.
Coach Red came here.
Yeah, that's when Coach Red come. When we had the softball team, because he played a little well back in them days.
Oh, y'all remember Coach Red, don't you, Don Buck?
Oh, yeah. He went to the University of Houston. At the same time, or did he progress on into that?
He started at Dunbar, and then he went to the University of Houston. He was coach up at Dunbar, but how long been, you know?
I can't remember.
He was coach up there a long time, don't even
Well, he was coaching down there in the 70s when I was at the daycare.
So what?
I worked at Lufkin Daycare, Mr. Simons.
He was coach at Dunbar until the 70s when he went to Houston.
I'm sure that 73 or something, you did 70 through 73, y'all had kind of disbanded.
We had got too old then. Leg wouldn't hold up then. Give it up.
Who wrote that little poem about Dieball? Did you? Dieball, sitting on the fence. Think you're worth $4.50
for a cent. Yeah,
what about me?
Yeah.
God, be very sure. Do you remember Peg Leg John?
Peg Pete? I remember Peg Leg Pete.
Peg Leg John had a little old buggy and horse and rode around all, I don't know what all he showed him, but he came from over in the corner. Did you know Aunt Cassidy?
You remember him, Jim?
No, I don't remember him.
I don't know about you, Aunt Cassidy.
And for my time.
The quarters, both the blacks and the Negroes, built by a contractor out of Burke, and my father and his uncle for 7.5 cents an hour.
And when they finally got a raise, and they got a raise to 10%. And we think that's terrible back in those days. But in the 1940s, just in industry, so I hired a man that I know. He had 5 years of college, 3 years of teaching, and started him over 35 cents an hour.
That's what I started over. I thought we had 6 months.
And I was in the last week, and they said they just couldn't hire any man, people in the foundry, and they pay them $10 an hour, and they come in there and work 2 hours.
Go.
And if you stay 60 days, we'll pay you $12. Well, that 7.5 cents an hour was that back then.
Oh, yeah.
That's the ratio of the 40s.
I wasn't paying a whole lot for taking cotton back in those days.
No.
25 cents a hundred. I remember that. 25 cents a hundred. Take you all day to pick a hundred.
I went to Grofton in August to see my uncle and picked cotton and had the tuition over there.
Oh, did it?
There's something else.
Tuition wasn't about $10, was it? About 10, $15 a month.
Yeah, he was wondering what tuition was when he was there.
I think it was 22 and a half.
I know it was from somewhere back then.
Mr. Rubin, besides your peanut butter patty story, do you have any other funny stories from your days of playing baseball?
No, I didn't do nothing but no peanut patty. That's all I wanted was backing up there for the peanut patty. That's my daughter, y'all.
Yeah, I was about to say that.
Yeah.
My daughter going there, y'all.
You can stay if you want to.
Did you have the same manager the whole time, that 40 to 46? Was it that
Mr. Sullivan? No, this year was just all the manager right here when we had the Eagles. See, when we had this other one, we had a Cuffler was the manager. I forget his name. Down there in Dieball, then it's been so long, he died. But Dieball had two different teams. When he come there, we had the Eagles. When this other man, we had the Dragons. See, I got a picture of one of them when I was a Dragon and him.
That's the one with your son. Right?
That's right. Yeah. That's the one with my son on there.
Dragons first.
See, I had the Dieball Dragons right there. Yeah. I had that one made. But on this one here, it was the Eagles.
Yeah. About how many people would you have on a team?
We had about 12 or 13 on there.
So we had a pretty good chance of playing.
That's right. Okay. That means I had to ride the bank so long until one of them died before I could play. Back in them days.
Well, it's a shame that somebody else had stepped up and made a manager and managed.
Well, we got beat out that money when the other couple had it, we was all right. But when Otis Spice got it, that money went somewhere, I don't know.
Did he leave town?
Put it in his pocket.
Well, maybe put it in his pocket.
Did that just happen like
did he leave town after he took your money?
No, because he was working at Dieball, see?
He didn't
leave town. That's when we broke up. That's the reason we broke up. He didn't leave town because he was working at the sawmill like I was. Yeah. So he moved out of.
Needless to say, you didn't care for him anymore, did you?
No, ma'am. No, didn't.
Jerry, do you remember any real outstanding game? What one stands out in your mind the most? I know all of them do. Is there any particular game that you remember fondly?
Well, now, this here was one of the best games we played was when we played them North Dakota All-Stars. When we beat them 1-0. But I remember one year we played Pineland for the 19th of June. We tied up the first day, and we couldn't beat Pineland, so we come back the next day to play them. The 19th of June was on a Wednesday then. And so we had to come back the next day to play them to play the Tiles. We beat them then. But that was the only time we had a tie. Pineland come in the dive ball and tied us up.
When you travel to these other towns, did you ride in a bus or individual cars?
Everybody had their own car. I remember once we went to Leesville to play when not this one, the other, one of my other boys next to this one. We went to Leesville and I took my wife with me in my car. And when I got back to dive ball that night, the next morning, my third son was born. I took my wife with me, that's just that close. The next morning, I had to go get the doctor for her. My third boy was born. Yeah.
What kind of a crowd would you have? How many people would come out and watch you play?
Well, they'd be crowded all time with the little park we had in the quarter, see. Uh-huh. It would hold about 35, 40 people. Okay. Yeah. But the night we played the North Dakota All-Stars, we was in the White Park over there where the bank is now. Where y'all live now, there was a baseball up there now, over there. We played them now, so they had a big park. And we only had a little park over in the quarter. But when we played them North Dakota All-Stars, we played them in the White Park over there. They had a big park. And they had people all down the side. They had so many people there.
That time they lost
their
money, though. They sold 300. Tickets
at the gate, and it's amazing. That's 150 people just that played at the gate. That made $900. That was $600 more, or it was past that 300. So that was about 450 people. I'm telling you, it was plenty up there. That park was a big park, and they had them all down the side. And everything, standing up, watching the game.
When was that? In the 40s or
30s? It was in 1946. That's the last game I played.
Her uncle and H.A. Barkley that had the Edabite on First Street. Mm-hmm. Cars had sold peanuts 10 cents a bag.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
But that was the social activity or something to do.
Papa had some RC colors.
Before he said, that was before they got so accustomed to Sears Roebuck, you know.
Yeah.
Sears Roebuck. Uh-huh. That thing they had to get to be a part of Sears Roebuck and work to retire.
Anyone else have any questions? This has been extremely interesting.
Yes, it has.
I don't want to give, if anybody's got something else they'd like to ask, I want to make sure you've got the opportunity. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Just way of announcing next month's program, Kerry Kerr will be talking to us on March the 14th. He will be giving our program. And now I want to ask Johnson to kind of bring everybody up to date on what we've been doing with county records.
All right. Well, as some of you know, we've gone to the new jail facility and just took a visual inspection of the records. Mr. Darren was there, Mr. Weeks, Emily, Carol, and myself. I'll just pass a picture down just to give you an idea. Best we can determine, to avoid paying storage rent, the county moved a lot of the records that were stored in the Parish Building and maybe on the third floor of the courthouse to the new jail facility a little over a year ago. And you can kind of see the nature in which they were randomly stacked and things like that. So I thought that'd just give you a good visual representation. And that's sort of underlines the where we are with all of this. First thing we've got to do, and we just started working on that, is to sort of separate all the different types of record groups. We've pretty much determined that all the county offices have some records there. In looking at it, we saw some things as far back as the 1840s, and then as recent as 2002. So what we're trying to do is to separate them out and better organize them and identify what it is before we go to the next step. And ultimately what we will do is the commission will make a recommendation to the county on what needs to be done. And now we could speculate a lot of different possibilities and options, but we really won't be able to say anything definite until we see exactly what it is. You want me to go into any detail with Carol about? I mean, there's all kinds of issues that come up with retention periods and things like that, and then what the long-term storage requirements need to be. And again, there's several options available to us. Where we are right now is we were able to spend one day partly organizing these records, and we really need some more shelf space, and we need to work a little more closely now with the, I mean, not that we're not working closely with it, the county clerk, the district clerk, in meeting with him, but we need the opportunity for them to come back onto the site now and us to look more closely on these records.
Can you talk a little bit about the retention records and the fact that
they're marked as well? Yes. For instance, probably in the amount of volume, just space, you know, how much physical space we're talking about, the deed records, the deed of trust records, oil and gas leases, volume-wise, that would be close to half. Would that be a good estimate, or just under half? But certainly the largest single group of records. It's our understanding that all of those have been duplicated in one form or another, either microfilmed and or photostatically reproduced. In many cases, even the deed records that are here, this picture here, this is how we started pulling out the piles and identifying what they are, and we started stacking them. Even those are transcriptions in many, many cases. No, those are deed records.
Deed records. I have a question. You know, I do a lot of genealogy, and all I can say is that Polk County and Nacogdoches County both have very user-friendly courthouses. And they don't seem to, I was able to pull up a will of my great-great-great-grandmother Skurlock, who died in 1866, in Polk County, and they kept them in the county clerk's office.
That's where they're supposed to be.
So I don't understand why Angelina County.
Who got the sheriff and I think somebody needs to find out the procedures and the time retention, but microfilming them, they don't always microfilm. I dealt with records at NASA, and that's what we found at Ellington Air Force Base when we started organizing the Apollo records going to the moon. We had Gemini and Mercury records, boxes, racks, dusty cabinets. And this is exactly what this looks like. And this is our history. I mean, this is the lifeline to our county and back to finding our ancestors. And I'm sorry, but I want something that we can help.
Well, what I don't understand is why can't Angelina County have a more user-friendly situation so that people can access records? I mean, I wrote off to North Carolina, and I was able to get a copy of the original will of one of my ancestors, who was in the Revolutionary War, William Scurlock. So I don't understand why we can't.
It's not just these records, because I had family members that paid $100 to the library and never got copies of the records before they moved. So it's an ongoing problem.
What we're faced with here is the records are in poor place right now, unfamiliar.
Right.
And we do need to get them to where they'll be preserved, because won't ever be any more records like this. These
can't
scroll type records, because everything now is on the computer anyway. Just about.
But it may not be right on the computer. Misspelling, misinterpretation. And we get into that with our genealogy research.
But these are something that needs to be preserved. I know I checked with the county judge's office, and they don't really know what I was doing.
Yeah. And that's probably what we're trying to do. I mean, we hear everything you're saying, and I mean, that's our job. I mean, I'm director of the History Center in Downball, so I understand exactly what you're saying. We're just trying to work with the county the best way we know how. And
why wasn't their space included? See, nobody cared. We've got a new jail that we're paying for. Why wasn't there a space included? Why haven't they taken other space? The county courthouse is divided out. But there needs to be some place where it can go on the internet and the books that are printed as to where our records are, and people coming from New York or someplace can find these records to research. People go across the waters to Europe and they're finding their records and things. But nobody's cared, or the caretaker hadn't taken care, and somebody's gone and moved. And they've been moved out into several times from what I've just learned.
Well, we really, they were moved before we even knew anything
about it. Has this been in the newspaper?
Yes,
I have. Maybe someone needs to get a copy of this and put it in the newspaper on the front page and say, Angelina County records from the 1840s. What do we do?
And maybe send it to Erickson, Carolyn Erickson. Let her put it into her article. Let's get some people involved.
Well, I think at this point the county is working with us, and we're not happy with the fact that they've gotten to this point, but let's at least make an effort working with them. Right?
We've got to work with them, but they've got to work with us too. Yeah. They're responsible for them all this time.
There are some legalities. There are retention record schedules that they are required to keep.
That's what I'm talking about. They haven't kept them.
Yeah, they have.
They've kept them.
What they have done is they have microfilmed those that they're obligated to keep. And I recognize that microfilming is not the best. And that's one of the things that the county clerk and the district clerk are delighted that we are interested in doing what we can to make recommendations to the county commission, because they know that they occasionally have to go back to the original because the microfilm is not.
This is my list of membership from the American Records Management Association, Houston. Our records, our personal family records, our Bibles, our treasures, our books. And I just found this week. It hasn't been humidified. It hasn't been kept. It's not been taken care of. It was taken out of my possession. This is what's happened to our records. So, inventorying or whatever, if I can help in any way, I'll be glad to. But I know there's retention schedules that should have covered all of it. SFA had the records for all of the university. Don't tell them about 7 or 10 years ago or whatever. And Dr. Cage was saying, what am I going to do? And the state library was, and the records. So I know it was going through the courthouse. And if you microfilm it, and they give away, and they have been giving away the marriage license, but if you have a fire and you don't have records stored,
stored elsewhere in a climatized environment, your microfilm and your sawmill, I guess, that they do some store a copy of the microfilm to yes, that's what we're going to do. But they're doing it closer.
Did y'all see this?
Yeah.
And again, I've seen records on the street in Houston and different places that a lot of office closes. This is kind of what they've done with our records. It's a catch 22. It's been happening a long time. And,
oh, yeah, some of this might be.
It's not the just records, unless we have them in a place where that thing that says to here in some order.
The pictures are just to show you, what we saw, what we got to do. So that's what we're trying to do. What we got to do first, and then the county. I think it's exciting that we've been able to do that so far. So I guess my report is that it's going to take a few more weeks of working, 1 or 2 days a week, and we are working. They're cooperating. But that's what we've got to do first, is we've got to physically set these things apart, figure out what it is. And then there's all, that's what I'm saying, there's all types of options we can pursue.
You've got to have linear inch footage for your books, your everything. You've got to inventory and know what you need for shelf space.
Right.
And it's got to be worked into somebody's storage and somebody's responsibility. There were 27 boxes that I started doing this with in Walker County. 27 banker box files. And they were Sam Houston's court records and different ones, adoption records, and the county clerk was telling everybody they'd been burned in the courthouse fire in the 60s. And we couldn't, they had no place, they had no time, no money. I know where they are, where they've been. So how do we help? And where are you going to go when you sort them out? Where are you going to organize?
At this point, we don't know. I can't give you an answer on that, and I don't know if the county can.
How about a grant? Are there any grants?
We've discussed all of those things, but the game plan, as we discussed, is we've got to physically know what it is. A lot of these boxes we saw subscriptions, for instance, to National Geographic. Reader's Digest books, in some of these boxes.
That's what I took over a library full of.
So again,
Book of the Month Club books.
We've got to sort all this out, and we are working on it, and the county is working with us. But all these questions are the same questions that we've asked, and we're going to ask those to the county.
Yeah.
And point this out. We're going to make recommendations.
But we need to know where we are before we can go to the county and say, hey, look, here's the values right here. We've got them categorized, and this is what we need to have.
One thing that might be useful is any organization that you belong to that would have an interest, like Daughters of the Sons of the Republic or the Genealogical, any organization,
they need them.
Well, a letter from them, maybe, to us, in support of whatever we can do to save those records, might be helpful.
I've been hearing about it.
Yeah.
They're Angela and County people that might live here.
Well, I think that this would be useful for us in the long run, is to have letters of support from people saying we think it's really important to do everything we can.
And I think it needs to be done before the general public knows how to talk.
So they know what's going on.
So we got to know what we're talking about before we get on the public relations campaign.
Sure.
And that's part of what we just need to identify.
Let us start. Mm-hmm. We just have to start somewhere.
Right. And that's where we are now. I've already talked with Judge Berry because we ran out of shelving that first day, and he's promised us to get more shelving so we can do more sorting. And,
and it's just one step at a time.
And we have determined roughly what is the commission's already, the records. When would that have been transferred to the commission, Carol, of this county school superintendent's records?
Well, those probably never were. Judge Walker got those somehow, so those would have been when Judge Walker was there. And we did find the inventory of things that had belonged to the commission that was being stored with the county records. Unfortunately, that says one line, county records. So it says county records. It doesn't tell us a whole lot. But we do know that the school records that were there were, have been given to the commission. So we're pulling those out as we find them. And Jonathan at the History Center.
Some of them are at the History Center.
And we will be getting the rest of those to the History Center.
And I didn't, I'm sorry I didn't bring you, but we had some pictures of the History Center where these county records are stored now. And they're all in acid-free boxes, folders. Mr. Walker's, in his duties as school superintendent, had photographs made of all the county schools and was it 27, 28, 29, somewhere in there.
Very good.
And those pictures now are at the History Center. And we have those in polyester sleeves. They were properly stored and cared for. That's one of the steps we're trying to do now is within here, we've already determined that some of the rest of those school superintendent's records are in here.